This is AEW superstar, former AEW World Tag Team Champion Swerve Strickland, the mogul himself. Whose house? Swerve's house. And you are listening to the awesome, sick, electric, amazing Wrestle In.
Hello, welcome to our new podcast, All the Indies, where we have yet to come up with a pithy tagline. I'm MX Sharp, and I am joined by
Adam Ryan.
Hi, Adam. How are you doing today?
I am good. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this, too. So this is our new podcast on the Indies, and we're going to be using this podcast to talk about North American Indies. So the North American independent scene is something that Adam and I are very passionate about, and we thought it would be good to have a space where we could talk about it, we could bring some attention to interesting things that were going on, that sort of thing. So, I mean, Adam, do you want to get into a little bit more about
that?
Yeah,
no, I was just kind of, you know, thinking along the same line. So, you know, as I was kind of telling you before I recorded, you know, one of my first shows I ever went to was an independent show, one of my first wrestling shows I ever went to. And I think I've told this story before on like Flight of Five or something like that. But like the very, very, very first wrestling show I ever went to was a WWF house show in Cincinnati in April of 1999. And then after that, the next show I went to was the 2000 Brian Pillman Memorial Show. And that's kind of like where like my live event memories start. So I don't remember a whole lot about the WWF show I went to, aside from it being in the really cool Cincinnati Gardens. But the Pillman 2000 show, that was the show that had Benoit versus Regal, you know, that match. It had Just Incredible versus Raven for the ECW title. And if you watch that on the DVD, you might be able to see me because I kind of ran down to the floor when that match was going on.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's awesome. When you see High School Me on the DVD. And I also got an autograph from Ricky Steamboat that day, which I still have, autographed 8x10 from him.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was just a really fun show. And then after that, I kind of started going to, you know, that, well, first off, that show was done by HWA, which I'm sure you will hear a ton about in the upcoming shows. So at the company I'm very passionate about. So after that, like, I went to a show in 2002, and HWA show was July of 2002, part of like the All-American 4th of July bash and here in the area. And they had, this was when they were part of developmental for WWE, and they, on the main event of the show was Lance Cade versus Canyon. And I think also on the show, if I can remember right, it was like Easy Money was on the show. If you remember him from ECW, AKA Jason Jett in WCW, the Island Boys, ECMO and Chemo were on the show. You might remember them as 3 Minute Warning in WWE. And, I think it was Chemo went on to be Umaga. If it's either ECMO, or I think it was Chemo, and then ECMO went on to become Rosie, and he's actually Roman Reigns' cousin. So,
oh.
Horace Hogan was there signing autographs at intermission. So, yeah, it was a fun time, and I've been to a ton of independent shows. HWA, CZW, I went to a J.C. Bailey memorial show after he passed away in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Went to one Dragon Gate USA shows, tons of Ring of Honor shows. Back when they were classified as an independent in the 2000s. So,
right.
But really, I think independent wrestling is kind of like the lifeblood of professional wrestling. You know, sure, you got your WWE, you got your AEW, but all those people kind of had to come from somewhere. And a lot of them came from the independent scene. So, you know, you've got local independents all over it. I think of the independent scene kind of like minor league baseball. MX, I don't know if you follow baseball at all, but
I don't.
Okay. So like in the minor leagues, they've got these tiered systems. So they've got like, it's like four tiers. They've got low A, they've got high A, they've got double A, triple A, and then the majors. So I tend to think of like, you know, kind of like local independence as like that low A, high A level, which is kind of like the first starting off level. And then you kind of go on to like more regional independence. And then you kind of move up from there, like to the bigger independents like Revolver, or GCW, or West Coast Pro, things like that. That's the kind of way I see like independent wrestling.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah. So my introduction to wrestling, my history with wrestling, is actually very different from yours and much briefer.
I'm sorry.
No, just not brevity in like telling the story. I love hearing all that. I love to hear your perspective, but just I have been into wrestling for a lot less time. I haven't really spoken about this a lot, but I actually first got into wrestling during the 2020 pandemic, during lockdown. Yeah. So it was during lockdown. I was spending a lot of time online. I ended up in a Discord community that also had some wrestling fans in it. And actually the wrestling part of that Discord channel was the most active.
Really?
And it was like, yeah. And it was a sort of community where I wouldn't have expected wrestling to even be there, let alone be popular. So I kind of like, I went in and I was like, okay, what is this about? Why are we going crazy here? And the people who would become some of my best friends in the world were kind of like, come with us. We have nothing better to do. We are watching all of the wrestling. We will show you the way.
That's awesome. It really is.
Yeah, so my first exposure to wrestling at all, right? So my earliest memory of wrestling is when I was a kid, like 12. It must have been like during the Attitude Era around then, where I saw an advertisement for Raw. And I thought it looked really exciting. I thought it looked really fun. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, absolutely not. We don't know. That's dumb. It's stupid. We're not engaging with it. And I wouldn't know this until years later, but my aunt, my mother's sister, used to torment her with watching wrestling all the time.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah. So my aunt was really into wrestling. Unfortunately, she passed before I knew that we potentially had this thing to share. But that's just like a weird history, not really important.
No, that's really cool. No, it actually is really cool.
Yeah, it's just like, it's interesting. I think it is interesting because I feel like I do have a little bit more of a perspective of like what wrestling means to people who do not know anything about wrestling, because that was me for almost my entire life. And when my friends sort of like took my hand and were like, let me introduce you to your new personality, they showed me a PWG Young Bucks match.
Oh, that's a heck of a place to start.
It's a heck of a place to start. It's a heck of a place. They explained nothing. I was like, what are the rules? They're like, the rules do not matter. The rules only exist to be broken for narrative reasons. Don't worry about it. You'll pick it up.
Exactly. You just kind of figure it out as you go.
Yeah. So I think that kind of set me up, philosophically speaking, for a very particular outlook on wrestling. And it was only like after a while of watching old independent Young Bucks matches and a lot of other independent matches with them for a long period of time before I started watching AEW. And yeah, that's kind of just like been my whole thing, my whole personality, my whole everything since that happened.
That sounds kind of like me, only like an abbreviated version, because once I discovered wrestling and got really into it, it's been like the only thing. Well, besides baseball has been like something else I've been kind of like always focused on. It's been like wrestling and baseball.
Yeah.
There's like two things I've always been a big fan of.
Yeah. I am it for me now, it's wrestling and video games. Those are the only things in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's really interesting how you were talking about like visualizing the indies as like sort of the minor leagues, because I actually could not disagree more.
Yeah, and I don't mean minor leagues in like a derogatory term. I just kind of like mean it like I mean it like I kind of see like this the, like the tiered system. It's like how people it's I don't know, like a developmental system, if you will.
No, I know that it wasn't derogatory. I didn't think that you meant it that way. But it's like the way that I think of independent wrestling is like kind of its own thing, its own ecosystem. And I think that independent wrestling has a lot of tributaries that feed into the large bodies of water that are WWE and AEW.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a much better way of putting it than the way I labeled it.
But I also, and like, that's just demonstrably true, just the way that the talent goes. But like, I also think that the indies are their own thing, their own ecosystem in and of themselves that are not just to develop talents for bigger and better things. But I think independent wrestling, a healthy independent wrestling community, can be the bigger and better things. And I think that, you know, when I think about my experiences at a GCW show before, as compared to my experiences at an AEW show, it's like apples and oranges almost. Like, it's an entirely different experience. It's a much more intimate experience. It's a much more like close experience.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that independent wrestling has a sort of like beauty and a sort of artistry on its own that can only exist in that sort of scene. Mm-hmm. I think something that AEW is really teaching us is that when you start adding networks and when you start adding big money and when you start adding like these whole, you know, these huge stadiums and whatever, good can come out of it. There can be good things. It's really good for wrestling to be more accessible, but it changes things. It becomes something fundamentally different than it is on the independent scene.
Mm-hmm. And kind of to your point there, like, you know, you mentioned like going to an AEW show and going to an independent show. I've never been to like an AEW. I've never been to AEW. I had the opportunity to when they came to Cincinnati, but my son was sick with COVID or tested positive for COVID at the time. So I was like, crap, I can't go.
Yeah. Thank you for that, by the way. Yeah. That's very responsible.
Yeah. I was like, nope, not going. Cause my buddy had actually bought me a ticket for the show. And it was that show where Punk was like, it was the Send Hook show where Punk was like, yeah, Send Hook. Oh, yeah, so anyway, but I've been to like major shows like WWE and I've been to like major Impact pay-per-views and things like that. And you're right, the experience you get like going to one of those is completely different than going to a local independent or just an independent show in general. Like, for example, you know, like I said, I've been to like many WWE and TV tapings and things like that, and you're just in there with like a giant sea of people, you know, 5,000, 6,000 people, and everybody's just kind of like looking straight down. You're sitting in the seating bowl and you're looking straight down at the ring and it's just kind of like, okay, you know, we're all here. And there's not really much interaction with like the other fans and everything because you're all sitting in those arena chairs and they're very uncomfortable. And you got the big giant screen telling you everything you need to know. But you go to an independent show, you don't have any of that. You're sitting in like these, you know, kind of rickety folding chairs. At least I have sometimes. You don't have a big screen. You've got like the little entranceway and, you know, you could have anywhere from, you know, a couple hundred people like at a Ring of Honor show in the mid 2000s to, you know, maybe, I don't know, 40, if that, because I've been to shows where there have been like, maybe, I don't know, you could maybe count the number of people, on both hands, give or take.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. But yeah, so yeah, it's just complete that you can kind of like go around and talk to people at these, where the crowd's not this big and kind of, you know, chat with people a little bit. And I told the story on the Flight of Five episode, and I'm going to tell it again here in case, you know, people listening to this, you know, didn't hear it. But one of the shows I went to with my buddy Tim, it was an HWA show. It was actually turned out to be the last HWA show. It was in 2014. It was like 10 minutes from where I live now. And it was at this old rundown abandoned restaurant. It used to be a Ponderosa restaurant. And maybe 30 to 40 people there inside this old rickety beat up building that should have been condemned. So, you know, me and my buddy Tim were talking, we're just kind of waiting in line for the doors open, and there's this guy behind us and he's got a Pro Wrestling Illustrated t-shirt on, and, you know, we kind of start talking with him because he's got that t-shirt. We're like, oh, do you write for PWI? He's like, no, I just like the shirt. And so we kind of get, you know, talk to him a little bit, and, you know, find out he's there by himself. We're like, hey, why don't you come sit with us and hang out and enjoy the show? So it's little connections like that. You can make it an independent show where you can't make it a giant, you know, WWE or AEW show or an Impact show for that matter. Impact, I kind of see as like kind of like a mix between the two, because Impact, you know, they don't really run huge giant arenas.
Yeah, they're an interesting, very yeah. interesting vibe all on their own, I think.
Yeah. So I went to an Impact show last year. Mm-hmm. They did an Impact Plus special down in Cincinnati, or down towards the Cincinnati area. And I went, took my son and a couple friends. We all went together. And it's, you know, it's not a huge venue. It's like a little concert hall. But the arena in there, you know, it feels like you're kind of in a sea of people. So it's kind of like this weird kind of mix. So you really don't get to interact with the people that are next to you, except, you know, that are in your group. But it's still, it's more like a very intimate environment. Am I making sense?
No, yeah. It's just like a different vibe. It's a different energy. Yeah. Would you say that energy with independent wrestling is sort of what like drives your passion for it? Or like, if not, like, what are the things that drive your passion for independent wrestling? Because I can tell you're very passionate.
Yeah, so like one of the things that you know drives my passion for independent wrestling is because I had a strong local indie around here for so long, and the Cincinnati scene was so vibrant for so long. So in the mid-2000s, early to mid-2000s, you had HWA was still running pretty strong. They had a company called BPW around here. It only lasted for a few years, but it was run by Shark Boy. And I went to a BPW show at the in the middle of the county fair. They did it like on a Thursday or Friday at the county fair one year. And, you know, there's a few people in the grandstand. You know, me and my buddies were there. They had Greg Valentine versus Coco Beware on the card. So that's an 80s throwback right there. Also, Abyss from TNA was on the card because he got his start in this area as well. And then so many people kind of going to that, so many people have gotten their start in like the Cincinnati area. So speaking about Abyss, Wildcat Chris Harris, those two got started in NWF, which is still like the local indie around here. They're still running pretty strong. Let's see who else. John Moxley got his start in HWA. Jake Crist, we'll talk about them later on, most likely. I'm trying to think who else off the top of my head. There's tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of others that kind of got their start in this area. Shark Boy, you know, one I mentioned, Nigel McGuinness, mm-hmm. The Blade.
Right, yeah. So for you, it's like, this is like sort of the future of wrestling, right?
Right,
like exactly. Independents are the future of wrestling. The people that we're seeing now are like the people that are going to be the big names later.
Exactly. And like when AEW kind of comes in this area, so when they come to like Dayton or Indianapolis or Cincinnati or even like Lexington or Louisville, they'll get some of the regional guys from like the Cincinnati and mm-hmm. area, and they'll bring them in and they'll wrestle on Dark
mm-hmm.
if they still tape Dark before the show. That is,
they do, yeah,
yeah. But they had like, I think first time they hit Indianapolis, they had like Lord Crew on there, and he's a kind of a big name right now in this area. They had Nikki Victory, that she was like, I think at the time she was the NWF Women's Champion. If she wasn't, she's one of their top women stars.
Right.
You know, when they did Dayton earlier this year, they brought in people from Revolver. So Crash Jackson, he wrestled on Dark, and he was also one of the security guards on Dynamite. So it's really cool to kind of see like the local people on like, you know, Dark or Elevation or even like Ring of Honor now when they tape it before Dynamite. Mm-hmm. So it's just really cool to see like all the local people do good and kind of get their start and like kind of talking to that, you know, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about before. All these local people, you know, all these big people got their start in this area. So that's kind of like what drives me. It's like, you know, I want to see more people from this area do good.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think for me, what drives my passion about independent wrestling is I'm going to be one of those people that's like really, I guess, pretentious about wrestling as art. But that's mm-hmm. just like, I kind of don't mean art in like the way that like you elevate something to the level of art. You elevate something from entertainment to art. That's actually sort of the opposite, because like I feel very strongly about art that's considered quote unquote lowbrow. I feel very strongly about art that's considered, you know, not worth paying attention to, not big enough, right? Not smart enough, not refined enough. You know, the things that we classify as art as a society and as a culture, as like, you know, these things up here are art. And then that down there is just entertainment for, that's just bread and circuses for the plebeians, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just considered not as important, not as worth paying attention to, and like no more so than with independent wrestling, I feel a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel very strongly about the sort of like the good art that is on the independent wrestling scene, and it's good in a way that it can only be in the independent wrestling scene. Like the sorts of things that can only happen, you know, in these sort of close, very intimate communal spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to celebrate and highlight those things, like that sort of thing for its own sake. And like, I really want to talk about the things that are exciting to me about, you know, wrestling as an art form, the things that compel me, the things that drive me to come back over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, the high emotions and the intimate sort of parasocial relationships that are formed, which obviously are a double-edged sword, but those sorts of things are what drive my passion. And I think that they're worth looking at on their own and on their own terms. And I think that the sorts of things that you can get out of an independent scene, the sorts of things that you can get out of your local indie, the feeling that you can get by watching like just a cracking good match on something that looks like it was filmed on a potato, I will take a potato indie match over all of these like hyper cut sort of like nonsense on TV like any day of the week.
Makes it feel raw and visceral, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that's what I love about independent wrestling, is how raw and emotional and visceral it is. It's right there. It's right in your space. And it also like allows for more experimentation. It allows for more people to sort of like do art and experiment with art and drive change on their own terms. Like, I think the stuff that people like Effie are doing on the independent scene, like, as well as just, like, making really good stuff, like, really incredible stuff to watch, is also driving change on the ground level in mm-hmm. how we think about wrestling and what we consider wrestling and who wrestling is for.
And to be honest with you, I never quite really thought of it that way. So that's kind of, like, bringing a whole new perspective just to kind of the way I can start looking at things, because me, I'm just like, oh, this looks like a really cool fit. I'm going to check it out. And it's like, oh, this kind of leads me to this. But I really don't think of like the more social aspect of it. It's like, oh, you know, you can, they're bringing this and they're kind of trying to include, you know, more people,
mm-hmm.
And bring, you know, different backgrounds and things like that into wrestling. So that's something I never really thought about. So that kind of gives me, you know, more perspective to kind of think about next time I watch a show. So thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I guess like to that level, like, you know, we also want this podcast to encourage people to go check out independent wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can be really intimidating when you look at how much wrestling sure. there is and how many like subscription services there are and like who's doing what and the schedules are all over the place and what have you. So like, what kind of advice would you give to somebody who is interested in looking into indie wrestling?
So that's a really tough question. It's also kind of a broad question.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the first thing that I can think of, and I'm kind of looking to my right here, and I see like all my shelf of DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff, and I see my Halloween series box set. Okay, stay with me on this. Okay,
I'm staying with you.
Okay, all right. So I see my Halloween box set, and I'm thinking, if someone likes these movies as much as I do, then they're really going to like deathmatch wrestling. So I know that's kind of a stretch, but you got to think, you know, deathmatch wrestling is crazy and gory, just like some of these slasher movies. So like the way I kind of discovered deathmatch wrestling was, I think it was by accident one day, my friend had gave me a tape and I was watching, I was like, what is this crazy shit? And I was like, and I was just kind of drawn into it. And I'm just like, this is bizarre. This is insane. This is incredibly, and I love it. It's nothing I would ever do. Nothing. I would not get skewers stuck in my head or anything like that. But it's like, you know, this is really insane. And it, I think if someone is into horror movies, I think that would kind of be a good place to start for them. Because, you know, if they like the blood and guts and all that sort of thing, that'd be a good place to start for them. If they're more like, you know, if they're more like technical wrestling, maybe a good place to start would be a technical match or something from, you know, like a local independent, or maybe something they can find on YouTube. Because you can find a lot of stuff on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. You can, more than you would think.
Exactly. If you know what to search for, you can probably, you know, with a little bit of digging, you might be able to find what you're looking for. So like there's a really good Nigel McGuinness versus Chad Collier match on YouTube. And it's like 25 minutes and it's like a super, super scientific match. So if people are into like scientific mat wrestling, that'd be a good match for them to check out. That kind of might, broaden their horizons into like, oh, let's watch some of the Nigel McGuinness pure stuff from Ring of Honor. Let's watch his Ring of Honor title reign. Oh, you know, he wrestled, you know, Morishima. He wrestled Brian Danielson. Let's go check these guys out. So it kind of, you start with one and it kind of balloons from there.
Yeah. I will say that one of my favorite matches, I have many favorite matches, but one of them is for free on YouTube. It's the Young Bucks versus the Briscoe Brothers. It's a best 2 out of 3 falls match. And it's just like one of my favorite matches. It's a best 2 out of 3 falls where it's normal rules, lucha rules, and then hardcore rules or something like that. Something where the bets are off, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it's really good, and I'm not going to... I think you should just, like, look it up on YouTube and watch it because it's very good. But I think I would say, because this is something that I was thinking about quite a lot, as I am, you know, a relative newcomer to wrestling who is very passionate about the independent scene, that is trying to get into it. And I think for me, my biggest piece of advice for anybody who's looking to get into wrestling and doesn't know where to start is like to pick one or two wrestlers that you really, really like. So it could either be like a wrestler that you've seen on AEW or WWE and you want to know what they were doing beforehand, and then you can go on Cage Match and you can, you know, find where like where those shows were, and you can look it up and you can just like sort of start from the beginning and work their way up. That's what I've done with the Young Bucks, right? All of their PWG, all of their Ring of Honor, you know, you sort of start there. And I think when you start with like one or two wrestlers, or like maybe there's wrestlers who you've seen like gifs of them on Twitter, or you've seen just like them talking to each other on social media and you think that they're really interesting. You know, maybe you are a queer person and you've seen a lot of queer wrestlers. Maybe you like intergender wrestling and, you know, you want to see what Allie Catch and Effie are up to because like they're very much about intergender wrestling, or anything like that. Just pick a couple. Don't pick too many. Just pick a couple.
Right. Two or three.
Yeah, like two or three, and just do like a deep dive on them. I am going to do this for the Renegade Twins. They've come up in AEW a couple of times. They've been in ROH a couple of times. Every time I see them, they spark joy within my heart. So I'm going to dive deep and I'm going to look into things.
They are from my area.
Oh, are they really? I love them.
whenever they are on Dynamite and they get billed, they're like from Dayton, Ohio. I'm like, Dayton, Ohio, yes.
I love them. So, and then from there, you know, navigating the paywalls in wrestling is difficult. You know, you kind of just like, you kind of have to look at the subscriptions that are out there and see what's going to give you the most bang for your buck. or, you know, have some friends who have some subscriptions and dive into it that way. Like, a lot of it is going to be what's accessible to you, right?
And it impact, like, and if you go on YouTube, we mentioned YouTube a little bit ago. So, you know, if you're not able to get like subscriptions to like Impact or GCW or things like that, go on their YouTube channels. And a lot of these places have playlists of like full matches. Even Ring of Honor, I think the Ring of Honor YouTube channel still has some up. I don't know if they pulled any of them down or anything like that when they switched over to the new Honor Club and started all that up. But they had a pretty substantial playlist of matches up there. Some others I can think of off the top of my head that have playlists up there. IWA Mid-South has a really robust playlist of just free matches. I think Impact does. They've got, you know, the pay-per-view matches. They've got TV matches. They even post full events up there sometimes. I cannot talk. So it's Smash Wrestling, based out of Toronto. They've got a full match playlist. So they've got tons of matches going back years from people like Britt Baker and MJF, and PCO, Jeff Cobb, Jordan Grace, Rosemary. Even Rosemary came out of Smash Wrestling. And they also post their events on there. So like they'll tape their events, and you know, maybe like anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks to 2 months later, they'll post them up for free on their YouTube channel for anyone to check out. So, you know, if you don't have the ability, you know, to subscribe to like multiple streaming services, like Mick said, you know, figure out which one's going to give you the most bang for your buck. No pun intended when we're talking about Young Bucks. But yeah, figure out which one, you know, is going to be the most beneficial to you, and then subscribe to that. And then also go on YouTube and look up these companies we just talked about: Smash, Impact, IWA Mid-South. And go through their archives and stuff they've got posted on there. Figure out what you like, figure out what you don't like. I mean, there's something there for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Really, and then is. I'll also say Enjoy Wrestling is entirely on YouTube. So there's lots of shows. There's lots of great independent wrestlers on Enjoy. I think a lot of like the much smaller indies will maybe like stream directly to YouTube or post things up directly to YouTube just to get eyes on the product, right? And so there is like a bunch of stuff out there. And like, if you have a favorite wrestler that's like really active on the indie scene right now, they're probably going to be at these smaller indies, because indie wrestlers are just hitting everything, every booking, everywhere.
Exactly. And, you know, to that point, that made me think of something else. If you're looking to get into GCW, a good primer for that, a good kind of like basic introduction would be JCW, their sister promotion. They post all their shows and they stream all their shows for free on the GCW YouTube channel. That's kind of how that was kind of like my basic introduction to GCW.
Yeah.
I saw this show last summer from JCW. It was like their Great American Birthday Bash. They were bringing in all these names. They brought in Takeshka. They brought in Dragon Lee. Brought a bunch of people. And yeah. I was like, I gotta watch the show. It sounds like a lot of fun. I watched it. I was like, okay, I like this. So I kept watching like some of their other shows. I, you know, started watching some of their other shows on YouTube when they'd stream them. And that got me kind of prepped and ready for when I hit subscribe on that Fight Plus, you know, button.
Yeah.
To get the GCW bundle and stuff like that. So now I'm kind of feel like I'm prepped and ready to go for GCW when I did that.
That's such a great point. I can definitely vouch for JCW. They have good people. GCW folks go on their shows all of the time. They have great matches. And also, if you're not into death matches, couldn't be me, but if you're not into death matches, JCW doesn't have death matches. So that might be more palatable if people are kind of wary of like the death match thing with GCW.
Right. And JCW, they've done some hardcore matches, like, you know, your basic hardcore matches, but they haven't gone the next level, like with the death matches and everything like that. So
right, and they're not like GCW. Every show has at least one death match. Everyone.
And JCW shows too. It seemed to be a little bit shorter. Like the last one I watched, it clocked in at just over 2 hours.
Right.
So
yeah.
Not a huge time commitment. If you're looking to get into GCW, JCW is a great primer and a great place to start, because it kind of gives you an introduction to all their, you know, some of their top stars, because they'll come down, they'll work JCW, and then they'll go off in whatever direction. Typically, the JCW shows piggyback off a major GCW show. Like coming up in June, they're going to piggyback off Tournament of Survival.
Exactly. They'll usually have a show that's like the afternoon. So GCW, when they're in New Jersey, they tend to do like three shows. So they'll do like a Saturday, Sunday show, and then JCW will be the third show that's like the matinee, right?
Yeah.
So lots of stuff. Since we just mentioned GCW and Tournament of Survival, that is coming up soon.
It is. Let's see here. It's coming up on Tournament of Survival. Looks like it's Tournament of Survival 8. Saturday, June 3rd, in Atlantic City at the Showboat. I guess that's their home base. So it looks like so far announced is Rena Yamashka, who I only saw for the first time
on
their March shows. Like she's the ultra-violent champion. She had a killer match with Casey Kirk, and then she had a match. She's wrestled on some other stuff recently, too. She wrestled in the main event of the Montreal show that GCW did.
Right.
GCW versus IWS. That match was completely nuts. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. Definitely recommend it.
The first time I saw Rena Yamashita, I was just like, I love her. I'm in love. She's so cool.
I know. She's crazy.
Yeah.
Looks like they've also announced Tomoya Hirata. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if I butchered that. Looks like he's the King of Freedom World Champion. And then they've also got Toru Sugiura.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where he's from, unfortunately, so I'd have to look that up. But yeah, they're also doing the Deathmatch Hall of Fame in conjunction with that, which I'm actually pretty excited about the Deathmatch Hall of Fame, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Because Deathmatch Wrestling is... I love like old school Deathmatch Wrestling. I go back and watch IWA Mid-South on YouTube, like I mentioned, or CZW YouTube, which even has like some old school death matches posted on there. And I found some full shows just kind of doing like digging underneath the surface. I found some channels that posted some full shows. I won't say what they are, but the channel name rather. But this is kind of like their Tournament of Death, Tournament of Survival. And then they've got the Deathmatch Hall of Fame, and you know, they've announced Zandig and they've announced Low Life Louie. Mm-hmm. So far as the honorees, I guess, for lack of a better term. But Zandig, I guess he was the original founder of CZW, started the Tournament of Death and the Cage of Death, for that matter. And then Low Life Louie, I'm guessing he was probably in that same realm. I'm not too familiar with him, but let me take a look here. Let's see. You might have to filibuster for a minute.
we'll cut this out. We'll cut this out. It's not live. We're not live, pal.
All right, so let's see. Low Life Louie, he was the Jersey All-Pro Wrestling Suicidal Champion for 246 days from December of 99 through August of 2000.
Oh, wow.
So it looks like he wrestled a bunch for, he's wrestled some for GCW recently. It's like 2019, 2020. He wrestled a lot for Jersey All-Pro, IWA Mid-South, a couple matches in Ring of Honor, some CZW matches. I mean, he's pretty well known there on the East Coast side of things. So that'd be interesting to kind of learn more about him, too, when he goes in. I'm sure there'll be others announced after this podcast is released. So
For sure.
As of when we're recording this, those are the two that have been announced. I'm kind of looking forward to that, learning more about some of these people that I'm not too familiar with, like Low Life Louie, who I just had to look up.
Yeah. I really appreciate GCW for, driving this Indie Hall of Fame thing. I think
same.
I think it's really important to sort of curate and celebrate, the big indie wrestlers and big indie accomplishments that have been, because, I think this is the foundation of the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was nice to see them too, over WrestleMania weekend this year. At least I felt their Hall of Fame was getting a little bit more buzz than the WWE Hall of Fame. But that's just me.
Well, I feel like, the WWE Hall of Fame, it's very clearly, one narrative, and that narrative is very curated and that history is very edited. And that's not to say that there isn't a bias in the GCW sort right. of thing. You know, that is inevitable when you have just one company or promotion that's driving something like a Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
That being said, this is a hot take. I have a little bit more faith in GCW as a promotion than I do WWE, as far as, you know, honoring history and wrestlers goes.
Right. And, you know, and nothing against the WWE Hall of Fame, like you said, is kind of like their narrative, their world. So they're honoring people under their umbrella.
Right.
You know, who made their names in WWE, WCW, ECW, and then all the territorial footage that they own, you know, AWA, World Class, all that sort of thing. So, you know, they're honoring people in that realm.
Right.
But
right.
Like the GCW Independent Hall of Fame, they go outside that bubble. They honored, what was it? They honored Excalibur, mm-hmm. Cheerleader Melissa, Christopher Daniels.
My heart was so warmed by Christopher Daniels, though, because Christopher Daniels is truly one of the unsung heroes of professional wrestling, and
oh, yeah.
one of the best to ever do it. And I don't think he really got the flowers that he truly deserved. He's just like one of the best out there, I think, oh, in my opinion.
I remember seeing him, and I remember this name. I remember his name because I would see him, like, he would pop up on these WWF syndicated shows in the late 90s
uh-huh.
as a job guy. So he would be on, like, these shows like WWF Metal and WWF Jacked, or even occasionally, like, on Heat as, you know, as a job guy. And I remember hearing that name, and then he would pop up in WCW occasionally. I don't recall off the top of my head if he did any shots in ECW, but then he really kind of got going when he, you know, when Ring of Honor got going, TNA, they all kind of started up around the same time. So he kind of really started getting more recognition then. But yeah, I just remember him from popping up on WWF television. Those B and C shows that WWF would do over the weekends, you know, in the late 90s.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just like one of those guys where I know how good he is. Like, I know how good he is. And whenever I see him in the ring, I'm like surprised at how good he is. He's so good. So that was really good. But yeah, I am also looking forward to the Deathmatch Hall of Fame. Definitely looking forward to Tournament of Survival.
Same. I love a good deathmatch.
I love a good deathmatch. I do think, I do wonder, because I haven't really up until this point, like, sat down to watch a whole Tournament of Survival. I do wonder if I'm going to, like, watch it and be like, okay, that's enough death matches.
Well, did you watch the Nick Gage Invitational back in, like, what was it, November?
I have not watched the Nick Gage Invitational. I have not been as diligent at keeping up with the GCW as I maybe should be, which is a great reason to start a podcast, because then I have to, or else I sound like an idiot.
So, if the Nick Gage Invitational, I think it was the one they did in November,
mm-hmm.
Right? It was their first show on the Fight Plus subscription.
That makes sense.
So that was a really, really fun tournament.
Yeah.
And usually these tournaments, I've seen a ton of these deathmatch tournaments. So the ones I used to watch would be like Tournament of Death from CZW. And then IWA East Coast had the Masters of Pain. And then IWA Mid-South, they had the King of the Death Matches, which is like the original one. And then IWA Deep South had the Carnage Cup. And just these deathmatch tournaments are just so bizarre. They're fun. Don't get me wrong, they're fun. But they're just so bizarre because you just see all kinds of craziness that you wouldn't see on a normal show. And then, you know, occasionally you'll have like non-tournament matches too, to kind of give the wrestlers a break. And usually that kind of happens like in between the semifinals and the finals.
That
so they'll
sense.
Do their whole thing, and then they'll come in. I think that the new Nick Gage Invitational, GCW, did one of their scramble matches, gives the people in the finals a chance to rest. And then they'll come back, they'll do the finals, big, huge, giant, let's just break everything on planet Earth match. So those tournaments are so much fun. I know I saw an outdoor one recently. It was from like 2020. No, it was like later than that. It was like 2017 or 18. It was the Queen of the Death Matches.
Oh,
Queen of the Death Matches, IWA Mid-South, 100 people in the crowd in front of a VFW hall, and somewhere in Indiana.
Classic indie show setting.
Oh, it's just so bizarre. And the camera, the hard camera was in the back of a U-Haul truck. So like they had a the truck was open. It was sitting on a tripod facing the ring. And it was crazy. And in the background, you could see this whole this neighbor. You could see a neighborhood of people.
That's beautiful. That's the kind of stuff that I love about indie wrestling.
It was a wild show. I forget who actually won it, but it was a wild show and introduced me to some people I'd never heard of before.
That's really cool.
Oh, I need to go look up some of these people.
That's really cool. Yeah. So looking super forward to all of that with DCW. Mm-hmm. But I know that to just sort of switch gears a little bit, I know that there was something that you wanted to talk about that's coming up in independent wrestling.
Right. So you mentioned you're looking forward to the tournament, I almost called it the tournament of death, but the tournament of survival. I'm looking forward to that too, but another match I'm looking forward to is Wrestling Revolver, Jon Moxley versus Jay Crist. And that is on, let's see, I should have known the date of this. That is on Saturday, May 6th. So if you have Fight Plus, you can watch Wrestling Revolver, which I highly, highly recommend. Anyway, so they're doing Jon Moxley versus Jay Crist. I saw that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And that's mm-hmm. cool. One, Jon Moxley hardly ever works indie shows anymore. Or I should say he hardly wrestles on indie shows anymore. And when he does, it's got to be against somebody he really wants to wrestle. And then I was like, oh, that's Jay Crist. So now I was kind of like, wait, I've seen those two wrestle before, and they have. So they've wrestled, so their kind of history goes all the way back to like 2007, when they first faced each other in a 12-man tag at an HWA TV taping in March of 2007. I take that back, they were on the same team at that time.
Okay.
It was just, cage matches a little hard to read sometimes. Their first encounter, like against each other, was on May 1st of 2007. It was Cody Hawk and Jon Moxley against Dave and Jake Crist. At an HWA event in Cincinnati. So I'm guessing that was probably either a TV taping or one of their special shows, special events that they used to do on a monthly basis. I might have to go and look at the details. But yeah, they would get entangled now and then. But then they started having some singles matches against each other. And I was like, and I pulled up just their singles record against each other. And they've had 8 singles matches, which I was like, maybe they have more than that. This is just what Cage Match is saying. So I'm sure that there's some that are out there that are not recorded in Cage Match, which is entirely possible. So the last time they faced each other in a singles match, last time they faced each other, period, was April 10th, 2011 for CZW, where Moxley beat Jake Crist. So, but these two have been kind of warring on and off since 2007. So they fought in 2007 for IPW. Moxley beat Jake Crist in their first one-on-one meeting. And then in 2008, Jake Crist beat Jon Moxley for the HWA heavyweight title. So kind of going up the line here, there's Moxley has a 5-3 record against Jake Crist in singles matches. Mm-hmm. And they both come from HWA, which is like Cody Hawk and all those guys, Cody Hawk, Chad Collier, all those guys, you know, they've trained and they've developed a lot of good talent. Moxley, Nigel McGuinness, as I mentioned earlier, LA Knight. So he was down there with Moxley, The Blade, who was there as Pepper Parks. So they've got a really good track record of developing great stars. And I actually saw one of their one-on-one meetings, Jake Crist and Jon Moxley, in person in 2008. And this was the match I was watching right before we started recording.
Right.
So it's a steel cage I Quit match, and it goes like 35 minutes, and it's pretty nuts. I mean, they're in a small opera house. It's, you can see paint peeling off the walls and the wallpaper, you know, ripping and tearing. So, you know, it's pretty rough environment, and there's give or take 60 to 80 people there, if that. But these guys just go out there and they tear it up for 35 minutes. There's like a grill fork involved, you know, one of those things you would like flip burgers with on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, poking meat to make sure it's done, you know, flip over a brisket or whatever.
Right.
They use one of those, you know, they start stabbing each other with that. There's a chain involved, blood everywhere. And it's really, and to kind of go back to your point earlier, it's really raw and visceral. It's a one camera shoot. So this person is holding a mini DV camera at ringside and is running around filming all this crazy.
God, I love that.
And I was actually there in person for that match. So, and if I would go back, I watched it, I was like, I can barely see myself. Like, far back corner of this old opera house. I can barely see myself, but I had to kind of go back and watch that match to kind of know what I'm getting, you know, what to expect going into this show on May 6th. But it's got a lot of history behind it, like I mentioned. So these guys have been going at each other for several years. I mean, they've been apart recently. They haven't faced each other since 2011. But I got a feeling when they get in that ring on May 6th, it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing, and I hate to say, I'm happy they're having this match. I just selfishly, I wish they would have had it in Dayton on their next Dayton show in June instead of their show in Iowa.
So you could go.
That, plus it being in Dayton. So they all kind of got their start in the Dayton area. So Dayton area. So that would have made a little bit more sense to me, but I'm not going to fault the fact that putting John Moxley and Jake Crist one-on-one for a major independent show in 2023.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really, you know, when Mox is facing somebody that he really wants to be in a ring with, it's just it's just really something else. He really brings something else to the equation.
Oh, and Jake Crist is a really good wrestler too.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything from him.
He's been around for a really long time. He's been wrestling, I think, like 2003, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
He had a match against his brother in 2006, a ladder match that was pretty wild. And I've seen them wrestle, like they wrestled a team called the Mavericks in HWA, or they had like I think it was a best of seven series against them, and each match was a different stipulation. So there was a last team standing match, there was like a falls count anywhere match, something like that. I have to go back and watch the tapes, but you know, Jake Crist is he's pretty decorated in his own right, and if you haven't seen any of his stuff in Revolver, it's really, really good.
Awesome.
And his IWA Mid-South stuff is pretty good too.
I'll check him out. That's really cool. I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for that match and watch that match, and maybe we can discuss it next time around.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to, if you do watch some Jake Crist matches, I'd like to kind of know your impression of him, because he's someone I'm very familiar with. Haven't seen a lot of his matches.
Okay.
Just in this area in general.
All right. Yeah. That would be really interesting. I think I would like to round things off. I think we had a lot of good discussions here. I think we've really, like, you know, laid out our mission statement and what have you. But I think something I want to end with is I wanted to end with a sort of recent wrestling match that I found really affecting. That happened in GCW, and it kind of like exemplified a lot of, you know, what I talk about when I get so passionate about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So this match was Alley Catch versus Charles Mason.
I knew that was the match you were going to mention.
How did you know?
I just had a feeling. It's like, this the match she's thinking about. It's like, that's the match.
It's the match. So for those who don't know, I'm at Fake Sport Feel on Twitter, and like sort of my like title name is Intergender Wrestling is Good, actually, because every couple of months we circle around and we have like this debate about whether intergender wrestling is good, actually. And I have planted my flag. That is the hill that I will die on. And I think Alley Catch versus Charles Manson, Mason.
Charles Manson is from Cincinnati as well.
Oh.
Yeah, no, not go there.
The good and the bad and the ugly from Cincinnati. But yeah, so Alley Catch is one of GCW's top stars. She's one half of the tag team Bussy along with Effie, and she's definitely one of my favorite wrestlers right now. And Charles Mason was really complicated for me, because I was I'm not really a fan of the gimmick. So Charles Mason, there's a reason why I got him mixed up with Charles Manson, and it's because like he's got a kind of creepy stalker serial killer character sort of situation going on, and I have complicated feelings about it, and a lot of people just like out and out hate it, and just out and out just don't really think that it should be a thing. And I am definitely extremely sympathetic to it I think sometimes people can hide behind a wrestling character and can hide behind getting heat in order to do stuff that's like just really out and out fucked up. And I don't love it. And I don't always trust wrestlers, wrestling promotions to handle those sorts of topics gracefully. But, you know, in this case, so Charles Mason was feuding with Effie and Allie for sort of, you know, the first part of the year. There was kind of a story where, you know, he kind of joined forces with Pero. Pero is kind of is sort of this big monster wrestler.
Yeah.
Best known for his role in the Twink Gauntlet during Effie's big gay brunches. He and Effie have been kind of feuding for a while, and then, you know, Charles Mason, sort of joined forces with him, and there was a whole storyline. I'm still kind of, like, going through it, so I'm not going to detail the storyline here, but there's sort of a whole storyline where, like, they're doing a big back and forth, and it all culminates basically in this cage match with Allie. So it's Allie Catch versus Charles Mason. And like I said, like, he's got like a real serial killer vibe. He's like very creepy. He's like very creepy at women specifically. Like, it's just like a really uncomfortable vibe. And it's definitely a match that I wouldn't recommend to people without content warnings.
Agreed.
But it was one of the things that really frustrates me about women in wrestling is how we're still kind of stuck on like sort of the 90s, early aughts, girl power, this is modern feminism talking sort of vibe where, you know, the girls can get one hit on the boys, but the boys can't touch them. And it's like, it's very, for me, it's like very shallow. It does not allow for vulnerability. It does not allow for struggle. It doesn't allow for the full complexities of the human experience. It really boxes specifically women in a way that's just not true for male wrestlers. So in this match, Allie was vulnerable. She was scared. This dude was full on creep on her, right? It was not always the most comfortable experience to watch, but for me, it was so raw and it was so real, and it sort of respected my intelligence in a way that a lot of intergender wrestling, especially on TV, doesn't. And there was this moment where Allie's friend, Billy Dixon, who's had a very complicated role in this story up until this point, kind of runs out and he opens the gate to the cage up. And he's like, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. Like, you can come out. You don't have to do this. And like opens the cage, and Allie crawls over and closes it.
I remember that, yeah.
And it was, for me, it was such a powerful moment, because I think, you know, we sort of have these demons, like we sort of have these situations, these struggles that we have to get through. And it's something that like we can have the strength to overcome, but it's like, you know, the whole, you know, I have to do this for myself sort of thing. But it's also like this guy, this creep, you know, who kind of represents everything that is like bad and gross and wrong about not just wrestling, but the world, like is something defeatable, is something that can be defeated, that even if you're ground down and even if you're hurting and tired and scared, you can defeat it. It's not just running away. It's not just hiding. It's not just crawling out of the gate. It's staying, fighting out, because it's worth fighting out, because you have a point to make and becoming victorious in the end. I don't know, it was just like really beautiful and I really loved it. And it just meant so much to me because I fight so hard for intergender wrestling. And this is the sort of intergender wrestling that like is like the thing that people are fighting against, right? It's the dynamic that people are fighting against, the way that it looks and leaning into it and like making something like really effective and cathartic out of it. And I just love it. I just love that match. It made me feel good. It made me feel triumphant. I love Alley Catch. It was really great. Intergender wrestling is good, actually.
It was, and I agree. It was a really good match. It told a great story, and I kind of picked up on it like right when, you know, it was like that. I think that October show in LA where they started doing like they had the Alley Catch against Taya Valkyrie with the box and what's in the box and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then you kind of mentioned all that stuff and it kind of got ramped up from there. But that was a great long-term story that GCW told with that whole thing, kind of weaving it in and out of like Effie and Alley Catch and Charles Mason's group. And then they had Billy Dixon, you know, do the whole turn and join Charles Mason at the Chicago show in January. And then he sort of fell off a little bit, but then he resurfaced during that cage match. And that cage match was just, it was just so violent and raw and visceral. And it's like, probably so far, I'd say it's my favorite GCW match of the year, but you pretty much summed it up perfectly.
Thank you.
So two things I want to hit on real quick. So in terms of, you know, GCW matches you should probably check out this year. One I really, really liked was Masha Slamovich against Speedball Bailey. It was her first defense of the title. So I think it was the March 19th show in Toronto. They absolutely destroyed the place. They tore up the ring. They beat the living crap out of each other. Speedball was working heel. He was flipping off fans. Masha, I mean, they were just doing everything they could. And they just destroyed the place and tore it up. I've never seen anything like that match ever.
That's beautiful. I love Masha so much. I was so happy when she won the championship. That's another thing that meant a lot to me personally.
Yeah, so that's a really, really good match. It's something I definitely recommend. You know, if you like Masha Slamovich at all, go watch that match. If you haven't seen her aside from what she does in Impact, watch her in GCW. She's really, really good.
She's really, really good.
And in the terms of, I always like to kind of dig into like classic stuff now and then too. So back in February, I wrote about this match called this War Games match from NWA Anarchy, where it was the Devil's Rejects against Team Anarchy. And it was a giant war. And I'm not going to kind of, you know, go over the whole thing in detail, but you know, you had, it was a one ring War Games match because the building itself was not big enough to do two rings. So they had this one ring and they had a giant cage on the ring and it was 4-on-4. But I mean, these guys just, they fought tooth and nail for everything they believed in. You had tables, you had chains, you had claw hammers and meat cleavers, just to name a few things that were involved in the match. And you also had two giant dudes in there, Iceberg and Tank, and they were just wailing away on people. So it's free on YouTube on the NWA Wildside channel. If you haven't watched it, watch everything because it's like a 50-minute video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but that covers the whole thing. So it's got pre-match promos, it's got the match, it's got the aftermath. So it kind of tells us, you can get the whole story in that 50 minutes. So come to find out that there was a follow-up to that. That wasn't the whole giant blow-off to that whole deal. So there's a match I'm going to watch probably this weekend. It's on the same channel on the NWA Wild side. It's the Devil's Rejects against Team Palmer. So Jerry Palmer is the owner of NWA Anarchy. And it's a casket match.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's like a deathmatch style casket match from November 4th, 2006. So I need to watch as the follow-up to that. So I love good, crazy, violent wrestling, especially, you know, like when it's, I know I hate to say it, but it's like good, violent Southern wrestling, the mud, the blood, and the beer, like Dusty Rhodes used to say. This is kind of the kind of stuff that I love to watch. So I'm definitely going to go check it out and just kind of like this. I had to look it up on YouTube because I couldn't find the exact video, but I mean, it just looks like it's insane. And you've got AJ Styles and Abyss at ringside for it too, so it looks like. So it's just looks like it's gonna be a bloodbath.
An all around good time. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, all around good time. Yeah. So that's definitely something I'm gonna watch, and you know, once I watch it, I'll report back on it on our next episode and let you guys know what I thought.
For sure, for sure. I will be continuing to catch up on JCW. Provided that I can get that all sorted, I definitely want to do probably a deep dive on the Renegade Twins. I've been really enjoying them. But yeah, I think that's what we wanted to talk to everyone about today.
I think it pretty much covers it.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. So thank you for listening to this very first episode of On the Indies. We're really excited about this, so I hope you follow along. And also, please check out our other podcasts on the Wrestle In Network, All Elite Listening, Flight of Five, Ace Techers, Ocean Cyclone Show, Purovision, Tokyo Joshi Freedom Fighters, and Into the Wrestleverse. Plus, we have new Patreon videos coming, so that'll be really fun. And just search Wrestle In wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at FakeSportFeel.
And you can find me on Twitter at WriterAdam84 or at HistoryOfHWA if you want to follow along with my daily posts on the history of HWA results, title changes, things like that.
You should follow History of HWA. And thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.